What's up, Dream Warriors? Welcome back to another episode of a podcast on Elm Street. We are your hosts, Mark
and Brooke.
And this week we're coming at you with my pick in another 2025 movie with weapons. Is another one of those movies that we most definitely wanted to do last year, but given the fact that we had a year-long theme, it got pushed to this year, but that's okay. Did you watch this one in theaters?
Yes, we did. I watched it with Bettina.
I went with a buddy of ours too.
This is a good one for the theater.
It was. And he typically doesn't watch horror movies, and he suggested we go, so I was like, fuck yeah, all right.
Nice.
This is your second time watching?
Yes. Yeah. How about you?
Sleepy?
Yeah. How about you?
Yeah. Second time for me too.
Nice.
I swear I bought the 4K, but I must not have. I think whenever I went to buy it, it was sold out on Grubb.
Because
I was all stoked. I was like, oh, I finally get to watch my 4K. And then I looked. I'm like, I don't even have it on 4K. Fuck.
That's hilarious.
But... anyways, yeah, I think I had it in my cart and then it ended up being sold out.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah.
But anyways, before we talk about it, let's kick off our news and booze. What are you drinking tonight?
I'm just drinking the boring old Miller Lite.
I am drinking a No Boats on Sunday peach cider.
Nice.
All right. What's your last four watched?
Last four watched, only watched three things.
Me too, actually.
I watched Nightmare on Elm Street, The Dream Child. That was the first time watch for me. It's just, I don't even know. Such a weird fucking movie.
I see this.
Like, some of the things in it, oh my God, it's just so dumb and just like, what the fuck? Couple cool kills, but I just don't know. I think they're trying to do too much. Watch Brother Bear with Theo.
Nice.
Good movie. And then I watched I Spit in Your Grave from 1978. That was the first time watch for me.
Well, did you watch it with Theo?
No, no. Good movie. Good movie. I liked it a lot. I could definitely see why it was banned for so long.
Oh, yeah.
Because, like, the first 30 minutes or 45 minutes is just, it's a lot. But I think the payoff at the end, I think, is worth it. So I'll probably watch the rest of the movies in this franchise. I've been watching more TV shows, trying to get some TV shows cleaned up. So... I finally finished Demon Slayer.
Nice.
So I finished that series. Kind of pissed because the last arc, they're doing three movies. So, the first movie came out late last year in theaters. So it's not on Crunchyroll yet. I read possibly in a couple months. So,
okay. How big is the series?
I think there's five or six seasons, but like I think a few seasons have like 24 episodes, and then like a couple of seasons have like 8 episodes or something like that. So
it's kind of all over the place.
Yeah, exactly. And there's a movie in there too, so
yeah. Cool.
Yeah. What about you?
Put up here. I watched S4, the Bob Lazar story. So just the newest documentary on Bob Lazar.
Okay.
Then I watched Lee Cronin's The Mummy, and it was not great. I was pretty disappointed because I was super stoked for this. The trailers made it look so fucking scary. And like I said in the in our Discord chat with Kilt the Redneck, like there's just fucking riddled with crappy CGI, man. And it's just, I don't know, like you have Blumhouse behind you, and they're hit or miss with their movies, obviously, but it's like they have such a fucking huge budget and huge following. Like, use the money for the fucking effects in your movies. It drives me nuts because this movie could have been so good, and like some of it was good, but then it, I don't know, just terrible CGI, and it fucking pissed me off.
Fair enough.
And then I watched Pretty Lethal, which wasn't bad. Some kick-ass ballerinas in it. But yeah, I mean, I would definitely say check it out, but not a great movie by any means. But it's enjoyable enough. But yeah, that's all I watched. I don't really know what I've been doing with my nights lately, to be honest. Because, yeah, I'm not really playing anything. I'm not really watching anything. All right, for our news, not horror news. Oh, shit. Just disappeared on me. One second. Here. Where'd it go? Son of a bitch. Oh, there it is. So it's not horror news, it's video game news for this one. But because GTA 6 got pushed back to November, there's like a shit ton of games launching in September so that they kind of avoid it, avoid the GTA 6 launch. So in September, we have the Blood of Dawn Walker, the Halloween game, Wolverine, Control Resonant, Silent Hill Townfall, and a new Onimusha game. I just thought that was like, that's going to be a fucking hefty month, man, because I want f at least four of these. But yeah, we'll see how it goes. But I'm stoked for GTA 6, just like everybody else is. But I imagine it's going to get pushed back again because they just keep fucking doing it. They announced that there's going to be an Until Dawn 2 video game releasing in 2027. This one looks like it's going to be on a remote island, so that could be good. Zack Snyder is directing a remake of Escape from New York.
Yes, I remember seeing that.
Not sure why, but we'll see how it goes. Obsession jumped again because its second weekend it went up 39% from its first weekend, and then in its third weekend it rose an additional 10% from the second weekend. So every week, every weekend, I guess, that it's in theaters, it's just making more money than what it did last week, which is unreal.
It's gonna be the most profitable movie of all time, I think.
I think so. Backrooms breaks the box office, biggest opening ever for an original horror property. And it also marks the biggest opening weekend in A24 history. And it puts Kane Parsons at the youngest director ever with a number one film. So horror is just crushing it.
Yeah, I heard, I was listening to the big picture, they're talking about it. I forget what the stat was, but it's like, yeah, the youngest actor or something since like 1983 or like some like a long ass fucking time.
Director or actor?
Director.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure, but both those movies beat Mandalorian and the Grogu,
Yeah, they did.
which I think really goes to show like where the shift and I think movies is going right now, I think.
Yeah. One of the guys that I work with and I, we actually got into a little bit of a, not an argument, but a heated discussion today because he showed me Tarantino's quote saying that like Hollywood is just a bunch of like sausage fest bullshit now. And he's like, I agree with him. Movies fucking suck these days. I said, no. Hollywood movies suck these days. I said, the horror genre is like going through the fucking roof right now, man, because like we had Sinners last year that broke the record for most Oscar wins, and that's a horror movie. We had Gladys, or well, fucking Amy Madigan from this movie. She was the second female in a horror movie to win Best Supporting Actress or something like that since like 1983. I think it was from Rosemary's Baby. Something crazy like that. And then like we have like Obsession and we have Backrooms and like the whole fucking Jordan Peele, all his movies. Like it's just fucking, it's wild these days. All these YouTube directors are killing it too. But anyways, yeah. Hollywood sucks, but there is some good movies.
And also saw, I don't know if it was on the podcast on Amy Poehler's podcast that he said this, but Tom Holland was on it, and I guess he's in The Odyssey, obviously,
Yeah.
and he just went on about Christopher Nolan and like he's never been on a movie set like that.
Yeah.
And it totally changed his mindset of now on the Spider-Man 4 or whatever. Like, I guess he went to the directors and said, why are we making this movie? What's the point? Like, why we need a reason as to why we're making this, not just because it makes a shit ton of money and it's an easy big Hollywood movie. Like, working with Nolan, I think, like, just totally changed Holland's perspective and mindset.
And good for him, because that just goes to show the type of character that he is, like his real life character that he is, to recognize that. Because he's making fucking bank off these Spider-Man movies too, right? Like, so for him to question it, it's, I don't know, that's good. But anyways, what do we have for 4Ks?
For 4Ks. 4Ks, we got Hoppers.
Nice.
We
Oh
got
shit.
Bubba Hotep
That's
Steelbook.
fucking
That's a
sick.
fucking sick Steelbook. The Flintstones,
I have
which
that.
you bought. About. We got 10 Cloverfield Lane. That's a sick Steelbook, too. Escape from LA. We got One Battle After Another Steelbook. We got Charade on Criterion. And Five Easy Pieces on Criterion as well.
All right. Not a lot, but it's a good week. Keep thinking I'm hearing footsteps upstairs. And
Maybe your kids are being summoned by a witch.
oh shit, it's not 2:17 yet. Yeah, Sarah's not home yet, so I hope I don't hear footsteps. Anyways, all right. Ready to dive into this movie?
Yes, sir.
Okay, like we said in the intro this week, we are talking about weapons from 2025. Starting off with the synopsis. When all but one child from the same class mysteriously vanish on the same night at exactly the same time, a community is left questioning who or what is behind their disappearance. This was directed by Zach Cregger, who started off with The Whitest Kids You Know, which is like a comedy sketch show. And he directed one of my fucking favorite movies of the last decade, Barbarian. And then he has Resident Evil coming out next year, this year,
This year.
this year. And then he has a Gladys spin-off movie coming out in 2027, I think. So I'm excited for that one. And I'm excited for Resident Evil as well, because by the sounds of it, he's not letting the other movies kind of interfere with his direction of it. So we'll see. For the cast, we have Julia Garner playing Justine, Josh Brolin playing Archer, Benedict Wong playing Marcus, and Amy Madigan playing Gladys. I have three honorable mentions, but I'll let you name yours.
I'll go with Toby Huss, who plays
Okay.
Captain Ed. He was on one of my favorite shows of all time, Halt and Catch Fire.
Oh, okay.
He's been in a ton of movies like the newest Halloween, Maxine, Ghostbusters. I mean, he's been The Invitation, The Rental, which we covered as well. So
Oh, yeah, that's right.
this is like the third movie that we've done of his, I guess.
That's
So
kind of crazy.
yeah. But yeah, he's been in a lot of movies.
Yeah. I have Austin Abrams playing James. He was our little crackhead in the movie.
Yes.
Sarah Paxton playing Erica. So she was Alex's mom. And our boy Justin Long in a very quick scene.
Wait, did you
He's
say Sarah Paxton?
Sarah Paxton, yeah.
Because on a letterbox it says has Callie Schittera as Alex's mom.
Wait, you might be right. I might have gotten the characters confused. Sarah Paxton is in the movie. No, you are right. Who the fuck did Sarah Paxton
She
play?
plays Erica.
Yeah. Who was she? Shit.
Oh, was she Justin Long's wife?
Yeah, that's who it was. Not Alex's parents. They were someone else's parents,
Yeah.
one of the other kids. But anyways, yeah, she was one of the moms.
Who was she in Barbarian?
Sarah Paxton?
Yeah. She was in
Don't
it, apparently.
remember, but she was in The Innkeepers. That's how I
Okay, I don't yeah.
mostly know
She
her.
looks familiar.
Yeah. Was she in Barbarian? I don't know,
Oh,
just an ex
she was the nursing video narration.
Oh.
And then she did voice work because she also did the assistant and then Megan, which was like the Justin Long's the girl
Oh,
that he.
the agent or
So I think she
whatever that
was
he
the
signed
voice,
to.
I think, in that.
Okay, that makes sense.
But the girl that did play Alex's mom looks super familiar, but like
Yeah.
she's been barely anything.
So did the dad. I thought
Yeah.
he looked familiar too.
Yeah, he was
Anyways,
in
yeah.
Friendship.
The dad? Oh,
Yeah.
maybe that's why I thought he looked
Yeah.
familiar.
And then I don't think you said his name, but Alden Ehrenreich.
That was Paul.
Yeah, Paul. He was in well, Han Solo, kind of a fail of a movie.
I still never
Cocaine
watched
Bear.
that. Oh,
Yeah,
shit.
it's not worth it. Cocaine Bear and Oppenheimer.
Yes, I did see him in Oppenheimer. Yeah, that's right.
And then Justin Long's in this movie too, like I briefly mentioned.
Very short scene.
Do you think he'll show up in Resident Evil?
Yeah, I think he might be a Kreger.
Because I didn't even realize, like, from the trailer of Resident Evil, Austin Abrams is the main guy in that.
Yeah. And I really liked him in Weapons, so
Yeah.
I'm kind of excited to see his character in Resident
Yeah.
Evil.
Well, he's good in Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark.
Yeah, he was good in that. That's another one I want to revisit. But anyways, ready to talk about this movie?
Yes, sir. Alrighty, so we are talking about 2025's Weapons. Another movie that I think the trailer really helped it. Like one of the movies where it didn't give anything away in the trailer. It just basically has the opening saying, like the narration of the movie, like at 2:17, kids got up and like just left their house, you know? So I think that's why I like this movie so much whenever I first saw it, just because knew nothing really about it or right.
It was a really well-made trailer.
So yeah, it opens up with a narration. A little girl telling about this weird thing happened in her town. She said it's a true story. People died in weird ways. The police may have tried to cover it up of what actually happens. So it's Maybrook Elementary. Miss Gandhi, Justine, she is a new teacher, walks into her class and none of her kids were there except for Alex. At 2:17 a.m., which is apparently a nod to The Shining, I read. Every kid woke up and got out of bed and ran away. Yeah, and they knew that because the alarms got tripped whenever the kids walked outside, because a lot of them got caught on video and stuff like that. They closed the school for a month, and then they had to go back. And yeah, just a kind of great opening, I think, explaining kind of what's happening.
I really like the narration and how they went about that.
Yeah. So, like Zach Cregger said, I said it in many interviews, one of his favorite movies is Magnolia. Which I don't know if you've seen that movie.
No, I haven't.
But each chapter is like broken up into different characters and stuff, right? So the first one we get is Justine, and it's from their point of view, but then it kind of like does a good job of blending in their stories of seeing like flashbacks kind of, but you're seeing like stuff happening again, but from a different perspective. So they're in this school meeting. We see Archer stand up. You don't see his face. You don't know who it is. And I didn't even know that Josh Brolin was in this, like the first time I saw it.
Yeah, I don't think you saw him in the trailers.
So we see him stand up here, but you don't see his face. And him, like many other parents, are blaming Justine. They want to hear from her. Now, what are your thoughts on the parents and the whole town lashing out at Justine?
I think it's absolutely fucking crazy. If all of the town's children went missing, I would not blame their teacher.
No, especially if it was at school, maybe, yeah, or like during the day, but literally in the middle of the night, like.
Like, why are you blaming the teacher? Why aren't you like, it could have been anybody. Like, oh, the fucking cashier at the grocery store kidnapped them all. Or like that police officer kidnapped them all. Like, why would you immediately go to their teacher?
Now, I think there's a few things. There's a lot to this movie, I think, that it's trying to say. So we'll kind of get into it now. I think, obviously, the movie's called Weapons. Obviously, I think the focus point is that Aunt Gladys is using the kids or people as her weapons to get ahead and, to make herself feel better or whatever.
Okay, I'm gonna pause real quick.
Yes.
Do you think she's actually sick?
In a way, I think.
Okay.
Because at some points in the movie, she does look better. Yeah, she is wearing fucking. It's like that episode of The Simpsons of Never fucking Homer shoots Marge with a shotgun with makeup in it. Like just cake on. And she like talks like normal and is like really like uppity. But then whenever she has like her wig off and she's in bed and stuff, like she just looks really frail and like really fucking old. What do you think?
I originally thought she was actually sick, but then like I was reading through the trivia and Craiger gave Amy Madigan two different options for Gladys's backstory and he let her choose which one she wanted to do. So the one option was that she was just a normal person using dark magic to cure her disease. And option two, Gladys is a non-human creature who uses her bizarre makeup and wig in a poor attempt to mimic humans. I'm guessing she went with that one. And it's almost like when she's sick or looks sick, I think she's using the people for like their life force. So I think whenever she looks sick, maybe she's like running out of that life force. But I mean, like we're gonna get more of her backstory with the spin-off movie. But I'm assuming that that is the route that she picked, and I think it's the better of the two. But yeah. Sorry, what else were you gonna say with?
So I think the bigger meaning of this movie, is I think it's a way that they talk, he talks about and presents, not only gun violence, that's happening or has been happening forever, not just in America, but I mean, mostly in America,
Everywhere,
but
yeah.
I also think he's showing the grief of the parents in the town of these events happening out of nowhere. No one sees it coming. Her whole classroom is gone. And I think a piece of the parents, especially Archer, I think in those situations where like the gun violence is happening and some kids unfortunately don't make it, the parents may be lashing out as to you're their protector in your class. Why weren't you there to protect my son or daughter? Because it's like it's the first time I watched it, and there's one scene that happens in it with an AR-15 in Archer's dream, and I'm like, it's so out of nowhere, and you're like, what the fuck? And then afterwards, like talking about it and looking it up, and like, I think it really is about like gun violence and what it can do to parents, their grief. Like, we see briefly touch on it. Like Archer is sleeping in his son's bed, right? Like, all of that happens to parents when they go through something like this.
Yeah, it's
So I
all
think it's
grief.
just the town and the parents going through their grief of losing their kids. But he throws in this whole Gladys stuff, which I think is really cool.
I think your theory does ring true too, because even like the way that the kids run, it's very reminiscent to a photograph that was taken during the Vietnam War called The Terror of War, and it's all these people running away from their village that just got napalmed. And the focal point of the photo is this little 9-year-old girl, and she's completely naked because her clothes got burnt off from the napalm. So her clothes got completely burnt off of her. She's covered in burns herself. And the way that her arms are out, and the way that she's like kind of running down because she's in so much pain, she doesn't want to touch any part of her body, is kind of how the kids are running in this movie. They also look like Naruto if you watch anime.
So I don't think it's right that they're hounding Justine,
No.
but I do kind of get it a bit. But again, it's
Yeah.
like,
But also, you got to look at yourselves too,
yeah,
which is,
exactly.
I think they're afraid to do.
So after this meeting, they're like trying to fucking attack her and question her and stuff, and Marcus like escorts her out and basically sends her home. She goes to the liquor store to get some vodka. We briefly see James asking for some money to go visit his brother, but obviously he just wants some drugs. And she gets home and she's like really on edge. Like she sees two people walking and she immediately runs into her house and locks it and looks at the window and it thinks everyone, the whole town's like after her,
Yeah.
basically. So that she kind of relaxes a bit, and then someone rings the bell, and someone's fucking with her. She opens the door. She sees that someone wrote witch on the car, which is kind of funny, knowing what happens in this movie, right? Because like Archer could have wrote bitch, right? But you wrote witch for some reason.
While we're touching on that, there's one more piece of trivia that I want to talk about that kind of ends with the whole witch thing. So Justine was teaching her class about parasites shortly before the kids were taken. Principal Marcus is seen watching a documentary about cordyceps and its effect on ants. This involves robbing them of their free will and making them do whatever the parasite wants, which fits with Gladys taking over Alex's household and possessing people via her magic. And then another foreshadowing is the vandalism of Justine's car with the word witch written on it. So it's like there's so many different instances of foreshadowing with like the parasitic stuff and like losing control of your body and whatnot. I just thought it's really cool.
So the next day she goes to the school and Marcus says that she needs to stop working. She needs to take time off and she wants to talk to Alex, but Marcus won't let her. And she kind of says like, well, Alex and I are the only ones left. Like he's the only one I can talk to, but he thinks it's like unprofessional. She's given rides to kids before in the past. And so she just does things a bit differently.
I really like Marcus's character. I feel like he does have her best interest in mind. And I feel like he really does feel for her in the situation that she's in. He
For
just seems
sure.
like he's like a genuinely nice dude, but like
Yeah.
needs her to fucking lay low. Like,
Yeah,
just stay out of
exactly.
the fucking spotlight for now.
So she's reporting this to the police. She sees Paul, and he meets her at a bar later on. You find out that he has a girlfriend, but apparently they are not together anymore. But clearly, he's a fucking liar. And then they sleep together. I love the cut of this because they're like about to leave or something or something like that, and then she's like, "Oh, can I have a hug?" And he's like, "Yeah, it's okay." And then just cuts to them like banging.
And him hung over his shit the next morning.
So the next day, she decides to follow Alex home. She goes to the door, rings it. Nobody answers, and then she notices that all the windows are covered with newspaper. She goes around to the back. And she looks through this little slit, and you see the parents just sitting there on the couch, just staring. And she like stumbles and then goes back up, and they're still sitting there. And like the first time, you're like, "What the fuck is going on?" Like, it's so weird. She's back home, has a creepy nightmare. We see Aunt Gladys for the first time in the ceiling.
It's fucking scared the shit out of me in the theaters.
So. There's a couple times in this movie. So when they're having these dreams after they are in the presence of Aunt Gladys, because they don't see her, so is it somehow she gets in their head or something? Like, why
That's
are they
true.
seeing Aunt Gladys?
Yeah. Yeah, because they say, like, any face that you see in your dream, it's someone that you've seen before, right? So, like, your brain can't make up faces.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Maybe it is her going into them.
Yeah. I don't know. So she ends up talking to Alex, falling home again, and he freaks the fuck out, tells her to get the fuck out of here. And then she's chilling in her car with her pop with vodka, and it's dark out now, and the door of the house just opens up and just is open for like a good like 30 seconds, and then the fucking mom comes out like a zombie, and she's like has these scissors, and you're like, "What the fuck?" It
The walk is so creepy, man.
is, man. It's so good. And then she goes up to the side of the car, and Justine's asleep, and then the camera's like on Justine, like from the passenger seat, and you just hear the door open in the back, and you're like, "Holy fuck." And then you see this giant pair of scissors come up to the front and just clips a piece of her hair.
Yeah.
Oh man, it's so creepy.
I thought for sure Justine was dying in this scene, like whenever I
Yeah.
saw it in theater. I was like, what the fuck? Like, she's the top billed actress in this movie. I thought she was
Yeah.
gonna die like in the first 45 minutes.
Exactly. So now we cut to Archer's chapter. He keeps watching videos of his kid running away. And he just keeps making mistakes at work. He ends up ordering red paint for a door, which we see later he painted witch on her car. And he's at the police station asking the chief tons of questions, and he's blaming the police, like, "Are you what leads do you have? What do the FBI have?" or something like that. And he's like, "Are you interviewing Justine or whatever?" And he's like freaking out. And I love the responses from the captain to him. Like, he's asking the right questions. He's like, "Okay, what do you see that I don't see? It happened in the middle of the night. The kids got up and left on their own. No one forced them out." So he's like, "That girl's innocent. Like, what more do you want? Like, what are you seeing that I don't see?" And that kind of shut Archer up.
Pissed him off, but definitely shut him up, yeah.
So then it flashbacks to the beginning of the movie, at the meeting. and he's sleeping in his son's bed. And this is where he like follows Matthew out of the house, and then he turns around and sees the AR-15 floating above the house. What was your kind of thought like the first time you saw this movie, like that scene?
I didn't really understand it. Sorry, I'm just trying to see like what people's thoughts are on it. Yeah, people are just saying like the children were weaponized at 217. I took it as them showing what happened. Yeah, I don't know. I found it like I thought it was kind of a weird addition to the movie because everything up until now has been kind of like serious and like right to the point sort of thing. And then for him to look up and just see an AR-15 above the house, it just I don't really like the decision to have that in there. I get it, like it's just a
It's
dream, but
kind of
it
out of
just
nowhere, like, you know.
it does it feels out of place.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. Which maybe that's what he was going for. I don't know. But this fucking Aunt Gladys scene in the fucking bed is so creepy. Like, Amy Madigan is just unrecognizable, man.
She was in fucking Field of Dreams, man. Like I looked up her fucking
Man.
resume. I was like, who is she? And yeah,
Yeah,
she was like the
she's been
love
married
interest.
to fuck, what's his name? God damn it.
Don't tell me Costner.
No. The guy from Ed Harris.
Oh shit, really?
Yeah, they've been married for like 50 years or something like
Oh
that.
wow. Okay. I did not know that.
Do you think now I don't think I've seen any of the other best supporting actress movies from the Oscars this year, but do you think that the Oscars was kind of making up for not giving it to Hereditary? I
Sorry,
mean,
what?
Hereditary was like what, 2018, so like 8 years ago, but
Yeah, because who'd we have? We had Teyonah Taylor from One Battle After Another, Wonmi Mosaku from Sinners. Man, she could have won it too. Inga Lilias from Sentimental Value, Amy Madigan Weapons, and Elle Fanning from Sentimental Value as well. Not like a super strong nominee pool. But I mean, Wonmi Mosaku in Sinners, like she was fucking great. I still haven't watched One Battle After Another, and I've never seen Sentimental Value, so I can't really comment on those. But I thought Amy Madigan was incredible. She's not in it enough, in my opinion, to.
That's the way I'm leaning too. Like, I think
Yeah.
she was great in this, but after watching this movie after she won the Oscar, I'm kind of like, she's not in it that much. Like, her scenes, she just like pops up quickly, or like she's in it quite a bit in the last like 15, 20 minutes. But yeah.
Like we don't really meet her character until like the movie's 2 hour over t little over 2 hours long. I don't think we really meet her character until like 1 hour and 15 minutes into the movie. But I don't know, like what we do see of her, she did a phenomenal job. And if she was in the movie entirely, then 100% I think she deserved this win. But yeah, I don't know. I don't want to say she didn't deserve it because she did deserve it. It just she's just I don't know, it's a very short role for someone to win. I don't know.
But then again, why am I having a fucking
Toni
blank?
Collette.
No, Hannibal Lecter won, and he had like what, 15 minutes of screen time.
That's true. That's fair. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe it is what you said. Like they're kind of the Oscars are kind of giving some wins to the horror movies.
So the next day we see our Archer is mapping out kind of the area and where the kid was running from. He's at another parent's house. He's asking for camera footage. I love that he's asking the wife and she's basically like, no, like get the fuck out of here. And then he waits for Justin Long to get home, and he's like, "Hey, can I see the Karen footage?" And like, he's on the computer, and the wife just stand there like pissed off.
Yeah.
So he's trying to figure out where they were going to. We see him going to confront Justine at the gas station. She's like kind of like freaking out at him, like yelling, and she's like, "Why are you attacking me?" And he's like, "Well, like I'm not attacking you." Like he's trying to kind of justify it, but you know, he kind of is a bit, right?
A bit, but he's not as bad as the other parents were.
No,
Like, I feel like
no.
he actually wants to just have a conversation with her.
Yeah.
Like,
Yeah.
he's directing the fault at her, but he's also
Yeah.
willing to listen to what she has to say.
And then I love the end of these chapters that we get like
Cliffhangers.
yes, I couldn't think of the word. Yeah. Cliffhangers in these. Because at the end of Archers, we just see fucking Marcus running like crazy doing the fucking run, and his face is all fucked up, and man, he's scary as fuck, man.
Do you think that was his real eyes?
I was about to ask you, because his eyes are popping way out of his head.
Yeah. I don't know if Benedict Wong can do that, but
Hold on, I gotta look this up.
like he almost looked like Deacon in Waterworld with his fake eye.
Yeah. Oh no, they were it was
The
VFX.
prosthetics? Okay.
No,
Oh.
it wasn't prosthetics, it was VFX.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. But
They did
yeah,
it
that was
good.
they did, yeah. But yeah. Then it just ends and goes to Paul. Yeah, I don't know if like I guess maybe he did need like a Paul and James. Well, maybe a definitely a James chapter, but I don't know. Paul's chapter was kind of like kind of filler a bit,
Yeah.
because like not much happens, but like there is a bit of story that happens in it, right? Like you find out that Donna's dad is the police chief.
Yeah.
He goes to AA or has been to AA in the past. And then we see him chasing after James, breaking in the window. And I love their interaction when he like tackles him and he's like, "All right, is there anything that you know is doing the whatever the spiel of like anything gonna poke me?" James is like, "No," reaches in, fucking gets stabbed by a fucking needle.
Yeah.
Immediately punches him in the face.
Man, that punch was fucking filthy.
It was, yeah. Knocks him out. And then realizes there's a fucking camera watching him, so has to
Yeah.
turn that or unplug it. He ends up telling the chief, and the chief basically says, like, it will be written over in whatever, 2 weeks or 4 weeks or whatever, like, you know. And Paul tells James, like, if he ever sees him again, he's gonna fucking kill him. Donna comes back to work early, and she's like, "Oh, like, where were you last night?" And he doesn't answer, and she's just like, "You fucking asshole." And then it cuts to James is back at the station and runs away, and that's pretty much it for J Paul's chapter.
Yeah, I think it's true. You said it's more just filler. He's not really a character that progresses the story at all.
No.
Like, it's just another body for Gladys, essentially.
So James's chapter, he's smoking up in the tent or trying to get what's left of his heroin. He's going around trying to get in cars, just find anything to sell, finds the kid's iPad, goes to the pawn shop, and the guy is like, "No." He's like, "What do you mean? This is like an iPad, like first generation, man. It's like worth like $50." The guy's like, "No, not getting anything." And so we see him run away from Paul. And then James is just kind of walking around the town, and then he sees Alex's house. Why do you think he picked that house?
End of the street. It's a big house. Nobody's
Yeah.
home.
There was a car in the driveway.
There was a car in the driveway. That's true. But
Like the
yeah.
newspapers, I don't know.
But
Yeah.
like he didn't see the newspapers until he got right up to it, right?
That's true, yeah.
So yeah, I don't know. My best guess is just it's this house at the end of the street. There's no neighbors really.
Yeah.
It's kind of all, it's not secluded, but it's kind of a
No.
little further away from the other houses.
Yeah.
Plus, it's a
But
fucking huge ass house.
it is a big house. So gets in the back, is like kind of pick away at things and then sees the parents just stand on the carriage, sit on the carriage, nothing, and he's like,
Sees the kids
whoa.
first.
Does he see the kids first?
Yeah,
Okay, I
because he's
wasn't sure
creeping
if he
down the
did.
basement, and then all the fucking kids are there in the basement.
Oh yeah, then he fucking closes the door, moves the vanity in front of the door, like,
Yeah.
you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, then sees the parent or doesn't see the parents, and then they stand up, I think, right? And they chase him out of the house. He doesn't end up getting like a like spoons or some shit. I don't know
Yeah.
where it is, but where's Gladys during all this? Do you think she's sleeping or like what?
Yeah, because she would be there. Yes, she, I guess.
Because she shows up in a few
Later
minutes
on.
here
Yeah.
or later on, whatever.
Yeah, because she would have been in the house whenever he was in there. Because they're already in their trance.
Yeah.
So yeah, I guess sleeping.
Yeah.
Because they do always say that she's sleeping. And if she's losing her life force, if that is actually what's happening, then maybe.
So he goes back to the pawn shop, sells some stuff, and then he sees the poster on the wall with all the missing kids and sees a $50,000 reward. And he's like, oh shit. So he makes his way to the cop station, and then we see Paul see him. He's like, what the fuck are you doing? And then chases him, and it's like, Paul, you fucked it up, man.
Yeah.
Like, he could have saved the kids, man. Like,
Let
goddamn.
his copy go get in the way.
Yeah, exactly. When does
So James runs away from Paul, but James ends up in the forest again.
okay, I was gonna say, when was that?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was,
And
yeah.
he sees Gladys and she's kind of like waving at him from a distance. It's very
So,
reminiscent of
so creepy.
Pennywise.
Yeah.
So then he gets in his tent because he tents out in the fucking woods
Yeah.
and gets in his tent. Fuck, I love this fucking scene so much. And he closes the fucking zipper on his tent.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden he sees shadows kind of walking in front of his tent. And he grabs a handful, I think there's three or four needles, and he like that's gonna be his weapon.
Yeah.
And then the zipper starts to pull up and he fucking loses his mind, fucking stabs out the flap of the tent, and it ends up being
Yeah.
Paul. Gets
Yeah.
stabbed again.
He was like a fucking germaphobe, like, you know,
Yeah.
like, oh man, it's so funny.
He's like,
And
you
he gets to
fucking
the car.
stabbed
He's like,
me.
so he brings, so yeah, I about to beat the fuck out of James. James is like, I know where the kids are. I know where the kids are. And he's like, shut the fuck up. We're just trying to get out of this. He's like, no, like, I know where they are. They're at a house. So puts him in the back of the cop car. And Paul's like, you don't have AIDS, do you? He's like, what? You don't have like hepatitis C or B? He's like, I don't know.
Not that I know of.
Not that I know of. So he shows Paul where the house is. And it's like daytime still. So Paul goes, knocks on the door. Door opens. He's like talking to somebody. Do you think he's talking to Gladys at that point?
Oh,
He's
that's
gotta be,
true.
right?
That's true, yeah. Yeah, because the parents don't talk, so it's got to be
No,
Gladys.
yeah. Goes in the house and then and it cuts to dark and James is like been in the car for however long. But he's stuck in there obviously because it's a cop car. Yeah, does this
Hey, you see the front door open again, and
and
it's
then
Paul. Paul
Paul
comes
comes
out.
out
Yeah.
and then yeah, opens the door and drags James into the house.
Yeah. And then that ends James's segment.
And now we cut to Marcus. Again, Marcus, kind of filler, but not really. Like it's a very short scene, or segment. So he set up a meeting with Alex's parents to talk to them about what's happening. But then Aunt Gladys shows up, and I love the reaction of his receptionist. Just like can't stop
Yeah.
staring
Yeah.
at her.
Yeah. And she's like, your 2 o'clock is here.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Gladys comes in with her fucking like clown lipstick all over her face.
Yeah, like giant ass bag.
Yeah. Her
And he's
wild ass
talking.
wig.
Yeah, he's talking to her and he's like, you know, I really need to talk to Alex's parents. Like, he's just, like, super nice about it. And he's like, yeah, someone complained. And she's like asking, like, oh, who complained? And I love that she, like, looks at his, like, ribbons. And you know, like, because we don't know exactly how, well, I guess the second watch we do know how it happens, but
Well,
like
yeah, but on a first watch, you don't.
the first watch, you're like, you don't know what it is, right? So she obviously took one of his ribbons, obviously, right, to use after. So she leaves, and then he's at home with his husband or boyfriend. And I love they got fucking like seven hot dogs between the two of them. Like, Jesus Christ, boys.
This was a tribute to one of Zach Cregger's good friends, who had a segment. I think it was in The Whitest Kids You Know, but he was one of his best friends, and he died in a car accident, I think it was.
Oh, okay. Yeah, he was his writing
And
partner.
yeah, and the character that this guy played was like obsessed with hot dogs, so that's why
That's
he kind of
hilarious.
had this scene.
Okay.
That was quite the fucking spread, though, man. Like,
Oh man, yeah.
I was watching and I was like, you know what? I could get down with this. Like, this is kind
Yeah.
of good.
Terrible last living room though.
Oh, man. Awful living room.
Like, those chairs look so uncomfortable.
Yeah. And the stupid setup. Like, they have to, like, turn their heads to look at the TV.
It is a small ass TV too.
Yeah.
Anyway. So the doorbell rings and it's Aunt Gladys. And I don't understand this part, honestly. Cause she's like, she's going on about how she missed her bus and then had to walk across town to get here. It's like, why don't you just fucking walk home? And,
But I feel like it was because I feel like she was taking advantage of his kindness, even though it wasn't Marcus that let her in the house.
because he tried to kick her, get her away.
Yeah, so I think she was just playing into the I'm a little lady card. Please let me come in and get some water.
So she comes in and she's like, oh, what a beautiful house. Like, oh, I love this giraffe or whatever. And she's like, I love this kitchen. And then she's like, oh, like, I'm so, like, terrible acting, by the way. Like, not on the Madigan's part, but like
Just
just
like the
Aunt
character acting.
Gladys, like, character acting, like, it's like, oh, I'm so thirsty, and like, oh, you want some water? And they're like, yeah. He goes to grab a glass. She's like, no, a bowl. And he's like, bowl? She's like, oh, don't worry about it. It's this weird thing I have. And like, at that part, I'd be like, I'm gonna get you a fucking bowl. Like,
You
what are you talking
freaking
about?
weirdo.
So she gets the bowl and she's talking to them, whatever, and he's like, oh, maybe like we should call the police or something because she's like acting weird. And she like has this like stick with like or his ribbon on it, and he's like, is that my ribbon? And she's like, kept asking him, like, did you call the authorities yet? And he's like talking and doesn't they give her an answer, and she's like, did you call him yet? Because she doesn't want to like put him in the trance if he called the cops, right?
Yeah, because they're going to show up at this point.
Yeah. So, and then she cuts his boyfriend's hair. He's like, oh, what the fuck is going on? And then she wraps it in the stick and then cuts her hand. It's a stick, and they're like freaking the fuck out. And then she snaps a stick, and you see Marcus just go in this trance. And then,
She rings the bell.
oh, rings the bell and he
And
attacks.
that's,
Yeah. And what a brutal fucking kill. Holy shit.
man,
Like, when I
fucking.
saw this in the theater, like, because up to this point, like, there isn't really any kills or violence yet, right? That we
No,
see.
there's like a couple quick jump scares, but like overall, it's not really a horror movie until
No.
this scene.
Yeah. And so he's on top of his husband and just laying his head into his head just over and over again. It just doesn't shy away. And she's just in the background just washing her hands, and then she like puts the stick in the water and then he stops doing it.
Yeah, he's still in the trance, but he's like He's not psychotic at this
attacking the
point.
person. Yeah. So, crazy scene.
So yeah, that's what she does. She gets them in these trances, and then whoever she wants them to attack, she gets a piece of the hair. So like she needs an heirloom of the person that she wants to put in the trance. She wraps that around her stick, and then whoever she wants them to attack, she wraps hair is generally what she's using. And then once she snaps that stick and rings the bell, that's whenever they do their attack mode. Which leads me to the question of how the fuck did she do this with 17 kids?
What do you mean?
Well, how did she get all the kids in their trance?
Alex took their name tags.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, that's in the next in Alex's
Yeah,
segment.
that's right. Okay. All right. That's a lot of sticks, though.
Well,
Unless
no,
she
she
can just
doesn't.
do it all
No,
around
she doesn't
one.
use the stick. She does another thing, right?
Oh, that's her ritual thing.
Yeah, because he comes down the
Yeah.
stairs and sees like this big bowl, and she fucking hawks a loogie in it, which is
Yeah.
disgusting. So it was another way that she got them all at once,
Yeah,
because
that's
like
right.
she's not using them to attack people. She's
No, she
just
just
has them
wants
in a
them.
trance.
Yeah.
So yeah, now it's Alex's segment. We see Archer and Justine are kind of working together now. Archer has the map and all the lines going to this place. And Justine's like, holy fucking shit, like that's Alex's house, like the kid who whatever. I love also that Matthew was a bully as well to Alex, which I don't know, it's kind of interesting because like Archer seems like a really nice dad, like cool guy, right?
He does, but he seems to be like a property manager, like, or not a property manager, but like a construction foreman. Probably not home a lot. Kind of has a bit of a Macho Man bravado.
We can kind of see a bit that his wife resents him a little bit, I think.
So I think there is some home life stuff that we're not really seeing, and that's possibly why. Like, I'm not saying he's not a good dad. He does seem like he's a good dad, but.
I just thought of something. So do you think that Kreger is painting a picture that Alex is the shooter? In like that scenario, because Alex is the only kid left. Matthew was a bully
Damn.
to Alex. Justine's a new teacher.
Yeah, shit, maybe.
He's an only child. I mean, he's only like
Yeah.
9 years old, but I mean,
Yeah, shit. I never really thought of that.
he's the one that basically gives Gladys the kids, right? Not by his choice,
Yeah.
obviously.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of signs would point to that.
We see Aunt Gladys show up for the first time to Alex's. She has a tree with her. You kind of get a bit of backstory. Alex's dad is kind of complaining to the mom, like, why is she here? Like, you haven't seen or talked to her, I think. And he says, like, 14 years or something like that.
He's like, she didn't even come to our wedding.
We know that Gladys wears a wig. She's sick. And then we see Alex's dad doesn't show up. And that's kind of the first day that they get put into the trance. He gets home. Parents are acting really weird. The scene, like, whenever she is basically threatening Alex, like, don't tell anyone I'm here. Don't tell anyone your parents are sick. They're resting. And then she's like, I control you, basically.
Yeah, because he kind of fights back a little bit with her. And then she does her thing with them and makes them pick up a fork and they just start stabbing themselves in the face, like
So
fucking
brutal.
like 30 times, just fucking stabbing themselves. And then she stop makes them stop. And then she's like, I can make your parents attack each other. I can make them eat themselves. She said, I can do whatever I want with them. I can make them do whatever I want. And she's like, so you're not going to tell anybody about any of this.
And she tells him that she used his parents to try and make herself feel better, but it's not working. And so he can help her. And he says, "So if I make you better, will you leave?" And she says, "Yes." And she says, "I need your classmates." We see him feeding his parents soup and all the kids soup. Yeah, he steals all of their name tags, which I think it was a smart way, right? Because he's like in the class, like looking, to see what he can take, and then notices the name tags.
And it makes sense to have name tags because they have Justine, who's a new teacher,
And he takes his own name tag too. So Alex comes home and he sees Paul there. Paul's under a trance. So he's a part of that too. She has all this like salt, like upstairs. Her parents are like in front of the door and have like this salt, and she says, "Don't cross over the salt." And Justine and Archer are watching the house, and then we see the door open. And again, the door is open for like 30 seconds. And then Paul walks out, and they're like, "The fuck?" And then Justine's like, "Holy shit, that's Paul." And Archer's like, "You know him?" He's like, "Yeah." And then he does like this weird wave. He's like slow. It's so weird.
Kind of waves that they
So
come in.
they get in there, and just immediately they're kind of standing there, and then we see Justine walking towards Paul, and she is about to step over the salt, and then Archer is like, "No, stop." But then her like toe went over it, and then Paul just like fucking rages and runs after her and attacking her. And then James shows out of nowhere and is fighting Archer. And I love the scene with Archer and him because he just keeps like punching James, and then like James gets back up and then like throws him. Gets back up, throws him again, and Archer's like, "What the fuck's up with this kid?"
Austin Abrams did all of his own stunts in this scene.
Did he?
Yeah, which is pretty fucking cool.
I mean, that'd be pretty cool to be thrown by fucking Thanos.
That's true. Why didn't you just snap at them all?
So meanwhile, Justine is fighting with Paul in the bathroom. Gross ass fucking scene. Oh my god. He has her like pinned up against the counter, and she sees a vegetable peeler and grabs it and fucking shaves like two strips off his face. Oh,
So slowly too,
it's
like,
so disgusting, man. It's gross. And then meanwhile, oh, and she pulls his gun out and shoots him in the neck, kills Paul. And then James is still fighting with Archer. They smash through the basement door, and then he sees all the kids there. And then Justin ends up shooting James in the back of the head. Well, through the face, basically. Another question. Where was Gladys during all this?
She was up in that room. She
Yeah,
was up in her
but
attic room.
where the tree is?
Yeah,
Like,
because
was
she.
she behind the parents in that room?
Yeah.
Yeah, but then Alex gets in there. So where was she during that?
Like, she is still in the house.
Because she comes downstairs before the chaos ensues with all the kids.
Because Alex steps over the salt, and then his parents start chasing him around the house.
Which was fucking scary.
It was very much some shining moments in that one, like the with the bathroom door and everything.
Oh, wait, no. She was in the basement.
Was she in the basement with the kids?
Yeah, because Archer goes down there. He's looking through the
Oh, that's right, and
kids.
she shoots him.
And then she fucking pops out of nowhere. And, oh, she, yeah, she entrances Archer because he attacks Justine. Glad we got there.
There's a lot going on in this scene.
I just watched that in this movie like before we recorded too, so I don't know why I didn't remember. And I think Honestly, the best part of this movie is the feeling in the movie theater whenever you see Alex in there grab the stick, grabs Gladys's hair, and then wraps it, and you see him just snap the stick. And then you just hear like footsteps and Gladys like, oh
Oh no.
fuck. Like, man, the feeling in the theater, like so fucking funny, just a feel good, amazing scene
And it's
that
so
just
funny
goes on
too.
forever.
Yeah, it's so funny too, because like she's not wearing her wig. So she reminds me of the mother in Barbarian, right? Like just not like deformed and shit like that, but like just like scraggly ass hair. Like she's got a few strands of hair. And like her makeup is done so well in this part too.
Yeah, they are. So yeah, she's running away, like screaming. All the kids are chasing after her, like
So
run
fucking
through
funny.
houses. She's closing doors. The kids just smashing through windows. People are
Yeah.
like, "What the fuck's going on?" They end up getting to a front yard. One of the girls ends up chasing her and getting her, and then they just fucking rip her apart.
Yeah.
And like Justine's being killed. Alex is about to die from his parents, and then just they fucking rip her like mouth, and oh, it's disgusting.
Yeah, they take her upper jaw and just fucking split her head wide open.
I love the guy cutting the lawn too. And then as soon as she's dead, the Archer and the
Transcripts.
parents kind of go back to normal. So do you think that Archer was normal because he was only under her spell for like not that long?
Yeah, I don't think it was long enough.
Yeah, because her parents are still fucked up. We find out that they're still eating soup, but somewhere else. Alex has a new mom and was obviously in like foster care or something.
Oh, he's living with another aunt, like a legit aunt this time, like. That's the little girl narrator says.
We find out that some of the kids are talking again, but other ones are still kind of not all there. So yeah, that's pretty much it.
Do you think that's part of the whole like school shooting thing too? 'Cause like kids afterwards, they're so like emotionally traumatized from everything, like they don't really speak for a while.
I didn't think of that, to be honest. That's a good point.
I don't know. You've kind of really got
No,
my no,
yeah,
you got my
no.
wheels turning with this whole like
Yeah.
the whole school shooter type thing.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
Archer got his son back, but he may never be the same again.
Yeah.
His family will never be the same again after this.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. Cool. All right. Well, that's the way the blood splatters.
Oh, all right. How did you rate this one?
All right, so this was tough for me. My score did drop from the first time I watched it.
Really? Okay.
I originally had it a 4.5. I dropped it to a 4,
Okay.
just because I think that theater experience and not knowing what happened, I think really like just had a really good fucking time with it.
Yeah.
So I dropped it a 4 or 5. Still like this movie quite a bit. I love his directing style, the editing, the characters, the story. The score is kind of odd for me, but I think this is a really good fucking movie,
Yeah.
and I'm excited to see what Zach Cregger does with Resident Evil. And I think the acting was fantastic. I love Julia Garner. Austin Abrams, I love too. I'm not like super excited about the sequel or the prequel, I guess, the Aunt Gladys one.
Oh, I am.
I don't know. I
I really
just,
want to see what the fuck Lattice is.
yeah, but I just don't know what he could do, you know? I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah.
So, 4 to 5.
All right. I'm the opposite. I originally gave this a 4, and I bumped this up to a 4.5 on this
Okay, so
watch.
we're the complete opposite.
Yeah. The theater experience was incredible for this movie. Like you said, like when that end scene when the kids are chasing her all around, like the theater was fucking dying whenever I was there. Like everybody's laughing their ass off. It was just such a funny fucking scene and like just a weird way to end the movie, but a perfect way to end this movie because it was like the comedic value of it was just, I don't know, it was hilarious. But yeah, like if it wasn't for Sinners, I think this would have easily been my favorite horror movie of 2025. I said such a fun theater experience, blah blah blah. Gladys was truly a haunting character, and I'm excited to see what Craigor does with her in the follow-up movie prequel thing. And just like I touched on, like this whole batch of young horror directors that we have coming in is just incredible, and they're like, this is like the 90s horror boom all over again, but I think it's better. Like these directors are taking a lot more risks. They're not doing like, 'cause in the 90s it was all slashers, right? And which is fine, like we love slashers, but I feel like they're putting a lot more thought into these movies and they're making a lot more original type movies. And they're taking a lot of risks with them, and I think Craigor's right up there with all the other heavy hitters that are coming out these days. Yeah, I think it was a really, really well-made movie. So, yeah. All right. You guys know our scores. We'll head on over to Rotten Tomatoes and see what they scored it. There is a critics consensus and an audience consensus on this one. So I'll start with the critics. Zach Cregger spins an expertly crafted yarn of terrifying mystery and thrilling intrigue in Weapons, a sophomore triumph that solidifies his status as a master of horror. So based on that, what do you think the critics scored it?
I'll say I'm fairly certain this is certified fresh. I'll go 92.
Oh man, it's so close. 93.
Shit.
That's on 397 reviews and an average score of 8.1 out of 10. The audience consensus, loaded with bold elements that make it not just a great horror film, but a noteworthy film overall, Weapons is ultimately an impressive genre-bending experience that's original, entertaining, and satisfying despite its faint air of ambiguity. So the audience rating is an 80%. On 25,000 ratings and an average score of 4.5, or sorry, 4 out of 5, or an 8 out of 10.
Nice.
So right there with you. What's Letterboxd have?
Letterboxd has a 3.6 out of 5, with 3.33 million watches.
Okay.
My buddy Josh from HMC gave it 3 out of 5. Screaming Cinema 4 out of 5. Slashing Captain 2.5.
Oh, damn.
Tough. Nathan gave it a 3. Our buddy Ian gave it a 4. Jensen gave it a 4 as well. There's a lot of people that watch this movie.
Yep.
I'll say that's it because
All right.
I know a few other people probably went.
I know Erica was saying that Horror Cafe is going to be covering it too. I don't know if that's like
Oh
this
yeah.
week, if it's their next episode or not, but I'm interested to see what their thoughts are on it.
Yeah, me too.
All right, what do you got for me?
All right, sir. So it's gonna be a tough one.
Right.
So we're gonna do top 5 blind ranking of horror movie directorial debuts.
Okay.
So we're gonna kick it off with Hereditary.
Oh man, what the fuck? Gotta go one. I gotta go one with Hereditary. I know, like, there's gonna be so much more, but.
We'll go Shaun of the Dead.
I do love Shaun of the Dead. I'll go three.
Let's go with Barbarian.
Number two. I knew that was gonna be on the list. I should have put Sean further. Fuck.
All
Because
good.
I know there's going to be.
Get Out.
Yeah, fuck. Four, I guess.
Okay. And your number five is House of a Thousand Corpses.
All right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
Still a great movie. I love that movie.
Yeah.
Shaun of the Dead, I should have put at five. That was stupid. That was stupid because I knew Get Out was going to be in there. I didn't know who the last one was going to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. I'm okay with the list, I guess.
All right, all
Get
right.
Out should have been third. And then probably House of a Thousand Corpses and then Shaun of the Dead. Oh well.
Fuck it.
How would you rate those? Like obviously it's not a blind ranking for you, but I'm interested to see.
Probably Get Out, Barbarian, Hereditary, Shaun of the Dead, House.
Okay. All right. That makes sense. Yeah, 'cause you love Get Out, so
Yeah.
not surprised at that. All right, cool. You ready for the scare section?
Yes, sir.
Right. How did you rate the scares in this movie?
I'll go with a 6 out of 10. I think some of the jump scares are really done well. Especially the first watch for sure.
Yeah.
The makeup, like Gladys, is terrifying. Some really disgusting gore. I mean, it's not much of it, but like the couple scenes that there is, it's like holy shit, man. So I'll go 6 out of 10. Scary scene. I'm going with the first time we see Marcus running and
Okay.
those fucking eyes in his face are like,
Yeah.
this is the nicest guy on the planet, and what is going on? Like,
That's
how did we
fair.
get here, right? It's like,
Yeah.
holy shit. And would I survive? I don't know. It all depends on who Gladys has under her spell.
Okay.
So I'll say no, just
Okay.
for the sake of it.
My scares, I gave it a 5 out of 10. So it's not like really a scary movie until later on, but there's definitely like creepy vibes all throughout the movie. But then like once Gladys makes her appearance, it really kind of ramps it up because Amy Madigan did just such a fucking good job with her character. Let's say there's a couple of well-timed jump scares, both visually and audibly. Like, whenever Justine gets back to her house and she's like pouring her glass and then like people are banging on her door, it was just like so unexpected and out of nowhere that it like in the theater it like made people jump quite a bit. But yeah, Gladys was just like a genuinely haunting character and like super creepy. So yeah, she did a great job. My scary scene, I said the first time we see Gladys like on the ceiling in Justine's bedroom. Because again, it was just like one of those perfectly timed jump scares. And like you kind of have a feeling what that something's gonna happen, but just because like the whole setup's there, but you don't know what it is, and then we just see Gladys on the ceiling. Would I survive? It's kind of long-winded with this. Creepy old people freak me out, especially like when they have makeup like this, because like I've seen some women with some fucking pretty close makeup to this. So I probably wouldn't have let her in my house in the first place, like how Marcus did. Well, Marcus's husband did. And I can honestly say that I probably wouldn't go creeping around in a stranger's house. So, like how James and Paul did, like Paul's a cop, but like how James did. So, I want to say I would survive based on the fact that I'm more of a mind my business kind of person. Like, I wouldn't be putting myself in the situations that these people put themselves in, I don't think. But I don't know, because like Marcus already had a vibe from her. And then she shows up and you can tell he wants her off his front step. So I probably would have been like, hold on a second, and then shut the door and then talk to, well, my wife, not my husband, but and would have said, like, no, this chick's not coming into our house. I don't know. I think I would survive. Anyways, we can wrap this one up and You can tell us what we're watching.
Alrighty. So watch a movie that I think is definitely not talked about at all. It's basically be a first watch for me. I remember bits and pieces of it possibly when I was a kid. And we haven't talked about our boy Wes Craven in a minute. So we'll be covering The People Under the Stairs.
Fucking right. I was actually gonna pick this a little while ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Sweet. I've only watched this once and I loved it on that first watch, so
Okay.
we'll see if it
Yeah.
holds up to me.
Nice.
Nice. I'm happy about that. Sweet.
Sweet.
Good pick.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. In the meantime, you guys can catch us on social media at A Podcast on Elm Street on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. If you click the link in our bio on Instagram, you'll find links to our T Public account where we have our merch. There's a link to our Patreon account if you wish to support the podcast that way. And there's links to our individual Letterboxd accounts, our Discord server, and anywhere that you can listen to us. Thanks for checking out this episode. Come back in 2 weeks for The People Under the Stairs.
Yes, sir. Talk to you guys in a couple weeks.
Bye.
Bye.